Hi, this is Joel Bogus, one half of the Relaunch Show broadcast team, and you are listening to my buddy Jeff Smith. Vroom, vroom, beer.
Yay, that was awesome.
Is that okay?
No, that was the best. I like the way you did vroom, vroom, beer.
Well, let me do it one more time.
Okay, more time. Go for it.
Hi, this is Joel Bogus. One half of the broadcast team of the Relaunch Show. And you are listening to my buddy Jeff Smith and Vroom Vroom Veer.
Are you ready to thoughtfully steer away from your revved up, frenzied, and far too often scripted life? Then welcome to Vroom Vroom Veer with Jeff Smith, where he guides you down the road differently traveled by sharing unique experiences with guests who have managed to shift away from a life stuck on cruise control and veered their way into a more authentic and fulfilling one in all sorts of interesting and kind of remarkable ways. Get ready to vroom vroom veer with your differently traveled road chauffeur, Jeff Smith.
Phaedra? Thank you so much for being on Vroom Vroom Veer and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So you are America's crisis coach.
That is what they tell me.
Yeah.
And that's what the business card says.
I love it. I love it. And your website is, let me make sure I get it right, doinglifewithphaedra.com. Did I get that right?
Yes. And if you're, that's too large and long and confusing, you can just go to americascrisiscoach.com and you'll get to the same place.
That's perfect. That's so much easier to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. Always nice to have that redirect URL. Good job. Okay. So you know what we do on Vroom Vroom Veer. We talk about vrooming and veering. And my goodness, you've had lots of vrooming and lots of veering. And you're laughing about it. So, you know, I think one of the main reasons I do the show is so many people in my life have told me they just love hearing me laugh.
Aww.
Thanks.
I get accused of cackling.
That's great.
I do a really mean Wicked Witch of the West.
My pretty.
Exactly.
That one?
Yes.
Everybody's got to do that.
And your little dog, too.
And your little dog, too.
There you go. Good job. Well done. Okay. So on the level of vrooming and veering, where do you want to start? Because we could go all the way back to age 10 if we want to start like
really
dark.
No, I was
really
locked in the basement in age 10. So no.
No. You don't want to go there. Okay.
Yeah.
So
that was
a
dark place.
Where do you want to start?
I think my vroom vrooming was really in my mid-30s, and okay. I suppose people would have said an up-and-comer at this point. I was a columnist. I was blogging before blogging was a thing.
You were country before country was cool.
Totally. Will you be the Donnie to my Marie?
Wait, I don't have any purple socks.
Oh, man.
Wow, we're dating ourselves. It's good. I like it.
Yeah, it's just trivia.
There you go.
Yeah, so, I mean, things were going well. My kids were growing. I had been single for a while, recovering from what felt like chronic divorce, but actually it's kind of a sad story. But nonetheless, things were going really, really well. I was pretty focused, really successful in my career at the time. I was still doing the J-O-B and...
Right.
Working in family courts, mental health, social work. But, you know, I had the steady Eddie and I had paid vacation and I had PERS and all that. So things were going well. I knew that I wanted more. I started to think about what life was going to be like when the kids were grown, kind of thing.
Right.
So things were going really, really well. And then...
And then...
I started dating.
And this is after you had kind of had a couple of... marriages that needed rebooting?
You know, my first marriage, it's actually pretty sad. I mean, I know that I sound like I must be unmarriable or at least not good wife material, but in all honesty, my first husband, he became mentally ill in during Desert Storm. He was a Marine and we didn't know much about mental illness like we do now.
Right.
And the pressure of his job in the Marine Corps and some strong family history that nobody was really paying attention to, he lost it and he's been unable to parent or be a husband. And it's actually very, very sad. I mean, I wish him the best. We've been divorced for, gosh, my oldest is 24. So for a while. So yeah. So I was a single mom before most of my friends had gotten married. And unfortunately, you know, my daughter inherited his illness. And I will say she's a very, very high functioning adult. And that's a story in and of itself. But yeah, so that's how my first marriage ended. It wasn't like, you know, we didn't try or something like that. It was just, it had to happen, I suppose.
Right. It wasn't going to work out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I got married again, was married for 10 years. And that one, yeah, that one went sour. My husband had an affair with one of my close friends.
Yikes.
And at the time.
With a close friend even.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a kick in the shorts.
It was. But you know what? I realized that it takes two to bring some dysfunction to a relationship. And, you know, we were young and there was a lot of things that I would do differently. And to give him credit, he's been married to her for over 13 years. So, you know, we all have carved out a way to be around one another. And, we have a daughter in common and she's actually getting married in 2016. And so that's actually, you know, it was a setback for sure. And that was really the platform that started my writing career and really, actually helped me become the best version of me that I ever was. So I attribute, even though that was a setback or a veer, as you might call, it really set me back on the vroom. So that was cool. And so, yeah, so I'm moving on about life and everything.
Life's getting good.
How
many years in between second divorce and things are good, right? And then you start dating. How many years in between, say like divorce number two and start dating?
About 5-6.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I was a certified man hater for a little while.
I can relate. You know, with those bad breakups, you kind of get sour.
Yeah. So, I was from a really small town. So, you know, the dating pool was pretty shallow and I'm tall. So I needed to be in a deeper end.
Maybe a move was in order.
Yeah, well, you hit the nail on the head. Uh-huh. I was all about, you know what, I'm going to raise my kids and I'm going to get the hell out of town. So I was just all about, you know, being super mom, which I really put a ton of emphasis into my kids. And the proof now is I have three amazingly independent rock star kids. So that's cool. So yeah, so I really use that time to really dig deep and find out, you know, okay, so what was I bringing to the table that, you know, my friend was able to start spending time with my husband in ways that I thought only I was. So I really wanted to seek to understand that. And I made a lot of personal changes and really got my act together and really
good for you.
Learned. Yeah. Really learned a lot about myself and what I liked. And to just go back a little bit, you know, if you see the video on my homepage, you see that I was really, really abused when I was a child, and I wasn't lying when I said locked in the basement. So you have to understand that I brought those maladaptive ways into my marriage.
Adult relationship.
Yeah. Right, so to his credit, I wasn't like a train wreck, but you know, I just didn't know how to play like normal kids kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, things could have been better if I had had my realization sooner. So I really, really fixed that and came to grips and was okay.
Now you were you getting professional help or you just helping yourself?
So
I'm an advocate of therapy. I'm thinking about doing it myself. To tell
you,
so many of my friends that I know are fine love therapy. You know, it's okay for okay people to have therapy.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't become a form of,
you don't want to get hooked on it. Just like anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So for me, I went to school, got my master's degree in psychology, mediation, counseling, that sort of thing. So yeah, I got the formal education. And then, you know, by the time of my divorce, I was getting pretty steady into my career. And, you know, I was 30 then. So, you know, that's a pretty magical time when you're, you know, kind of let go of the kid behavior and you're making some decent money, you know, mm-hmm. you're starting to think about life a little bit differently. So, I definitely got some therapy. I did a lot of reading and just digging deep and being super honest with myself about what worked and what didn't.
Huge.
So it was a successful time. The recurring theme,
honesty, mostly with yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to be honest with yourself first before you can really be authentic in the world, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you figured that out.
Good so for I figured you. That out and thought, oh, maybe it's safe for me to play amongst others.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I met my now husband, and it was interesting because at the time that we met, Google existed, and we went on a date, and then I Googled him and thought, oh, maybe this isn't a great time for him because he was going through some really powerful stuff legally, and it was white-collar based,
right.
And what was really cool and really impressive about him, number one, he was an intellectual equal that I had never experienced before.
Right.
And that was really appealing. And what was amazing to me is when I said, hey, you know, it seems like life might be really hard right now. Maybe we should just, you know, reconnect when things settle for you. And his response was so amazing. He said, I totally understand how you feel about that. I would love the opportunity to answer any questions you might have. So took him up on that. We got together and he explained to me exactly what he was going through. And, you know, I don't want to give you like tons of details. Right. Yeah. Cause I think you might fall asleep and okay. I'm sure snoring wouldn't resonate well.
Yeah. White collar crime is not exciting or salacious. Right.
Yeah, but it's very, very, detailed and, you know, hard to understand. So nonetheless, what was super impressive with me is that he was very, very open. And as his whole thing was, look, everyone suspects that this is going to go away. I'm doing everything I can to answer questions, blah, blah, blah. So
I'm cooperating. I'm giving documents. I'm doing all the right things.
Exactly. Yeah.
The lawyers say I'm good to go.
Yeah, exactly. So
okay.
Moving through, the pressure just kept being amped up on him. And eventually, they really wanted him to take a deal. And from what we were told, that's kind of the government way. This is at the time where the gentleman who was putting the pressure, it was actually his office, not him specifically,
right.
Was going to run for a public office. So he really wanted to show he was tough on, you know, his platform, right? Some of that's white crime. Some of that's, you know, schools. Some of that's, you know, healthcare.
It's a public example situation.
Correct. So he made indictments of a number of people from all different walks of life. And what we were told is this isn't very uncommon. And what they do is, you know, you come to an agreement and you try to rebuild your life and they get their media sound bites and then everybody moves about the earth. Well, for my husband, that was unacceptable. He had 6 kids and he was like, I'm not going to admit I did something that I know I didn't do. And I feel I can prove I didn't do. And so the pressure just kept getting amped and amped. And long story short, they put him in jail and applied pressure for 2.5 years to get him to take a deal, which he wouldn't do. And everyone was frustrated, the county, the state, everybody. And he took it to trial, not because he's arrogant, not because, you know, he was
because
stupid.
He was going on principle.
And he believed, I mean, his attorneys are like, hey, you know, you really shouldn't be accused of this. So they did simple things like, oh, cut off all his funding and said, well, you know, he can't use his money to pay for attorneys because if we prove he's wrong, then that means the money was ill-gotten. So he was left with a public defender, which is just crazy. So, and even when it got to the point of going to trial, the state felt that they didn't have a chance of winning. So they put a newbie in there to get trial experience. And this is the world according to Phaedra. I think that she used the baffle them with bullshit offense and just threw so much at them that their heads were spinning.
Right.
And when it came down to it, shockingly, the verdict came back guilty after a 6.5 month trial. And nobody was more surprised. I mean, seriously, people didn't believe. Now, of course, the state was just getting every ounce of media that they could out of this. So that was my, you know, my vroom, because here I thought everything was going to be great. You know, I'm doing
so
well.
And you're fighting the good fight.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, the growth just in my personal experience as a human, as a Christian, as all the things that make up who I am, I just really felt, oh, you know, we are going to come out so much better and triumphant, and it's going to be something we look
You're
back on.
You're going to have an Oprah moment coming soon.
Yeah, exactly. So along the way, you know, things were veering. He had a son whom he had adopted with his wife at the time. And when he got put in jail for 2.5 years, his son, who had been living with him after the divorce, was essentially homeless. I mean, he had a relationship with his adoptive mom, but not a close one. So he ended up living with me, and I raised him. He just graduated high school last June.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I gained a son, and Jim and I did get married along the way. And, you know, that... I proudly did that. I absolutely adore the guy, and it wasn't, you know, the most acceptable decision for social scrutiny. So that really kind of sealed my fate as far as my, my way. One of the ways that I was making money back in the day is I was a court investigator, and I was contracted with the same superior court that was actually having the trial, prosecuting. Well, not the state was prosecuting, but the courthouse that I worked in was where it was happening. And, you know, politically, they were getting so much flack that they fired me. And essentially, it blackballed me.
Right.
So I suffered a lot at being collateral damage. And yet, I look at it like I don't even know, you know, what would have happened for him. And if that was what I needed to walk through for him to have the childhood he deserved, he was in fifth grade when I met him. Mm. So, you know, imagine being a kid who's already, he was taken at birth because his parents couldn't provide. He was put in a foster adopt home with parents who actually abused him. And then he was moved at 3 and placed into adoption with Jim and his wife. And then that marriage ended. And then, you know, he's bouncing around while his dad's being accused of all this crap. And of course, everybody in the school is going, your dad's a piece of crap.
Right,
oh my God, you're gross.
Yeah.
And then he comes to live with me, this woman he's known for about 9 months, but really bonded with because I had the ability through my work experience to totally meet this kid where he was.
Mm. Yeah,
and
no
then
doubt.
You know, right. Integrate him into my family.
That's a little
and,
like spiritual kismet in a bad way, almost.
Totally, right?
Right? Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
yeah.
So you know, he gets raised by the social worker mom who can totally put his head back on
to,
straight.
Like everything that he's gone through. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean,
See, so
I look at it.
There are some stars lining up here.
Yeah, and I say, you know what? If this had to happen, and it meant that, you know, Jim never comes home, and yet Daniel had the best childhood he could have under the circumstances, then I'm up for it. Bring it on. I'll do
right.
it. So, and you know, I feel he's my child, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
so
oh, for
yeah.
sure.
So, yeah. So Jim was convicted and it was shocking. And then it got worse. The judge could have gave him time served. He could have done any number of things, but you know, judges are elected. And so there was pressure there. And so he threw the book and gave Jim 43 years. Now, mind you, Jim's 60. So we can do some math.
Whoa.
Yeah. So then it gets worse because this is a white collar. Jim is like, you know, a average height dude, nondescript, nice enough guy. On Google, I hate the images of him because they're, of course, the worst looking ones possible. But they send him because of the length of his sentence to maximum security. So he's in with the worst of the worst
Yikes.
People.
Oh, my goodness.
Trying to figure this out. And the coolest thing about Jim, of which there are many cool things, this man, his compassion and his willingness to just walk this out, no matter what people have said, and trust me, hate rained down on
courage,
that man.
Mike.
Oh my
He's
God.
Like Job.
Yeah. That's funny you say that. Yes.
It's true. My goodness. And, I mean, I already don't know him. I know nothing about the case, but I'm feeling compassion for the guy.
Yeah. So people, you know, I think people would have forgiven maybe my marriage had I said, oh my gosh, I didn't realize and I'm getting a divorce.
Right. And you turncoat. Right.
No, exactly. But I'm like, you know what? I've got this child to raise. He still had two more years until he was 18 when the verdict came. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to think, you know, it's kind of like driving in the dark. I can only see as far as those headlights right now. Right.
Right.
And
I love that metaphor, by the way.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Thank you. But what happened for me when everything went to hell, and especially when I got fired, then they're messing with my money. You know, it's right. Like, okay, I didn't even know this guy at the time that he supposedly did something. So my income is mine, right? We never had blended nothing.
Right, right.
So I'm collateral damage, and it got super scary for me.
Yeah, you're basically being like ostracized for standing by your husband.
Correct.
Which everybody would expect you to do. It's what you're supposed to do. But well, that's not in this situation. You're
Corinthians
supposed to,
says.
Right. You're supposed to run away because they're bad now.
Yes. Oh, wait. Well, yeah. I think people wanted me to say, oh my God, he's a, you know, a shyster. And, right. And I just didn't, I was brainwashed or whatever. So for me, it got incredibly scary. And unfortunately, I can admit this now, it was harder then. I started thinking that suicide might have to be one of my available options because I don't know if you can tell from this conversation, but I have a really big personality. And
no, you?
Yeah. Yeah. And so
you seem
I was
so mousy and quiet.
I know. So, you know, the thought of what I guess I could have been a Starbucks barista. But I thought I was blackballed from my line of work. I felt socially outcast. I was overqualified for a lot of jobs that I might have been safe in where people wouldn't have, you know.
Right. No public scrutiny situations.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't know how to tell my story. I mean, I didn't know how to apply for a job. And at what point am I obligated to say, you know, hey, there's this thing you should know. And mind you,
not at all because you're not even a criminal. I mean, well, you could have gone, well, okay, you're related. I don't even know if that's on an application or not. Maybe it is.
Well, so here's what happens.
Maybe it is.
No, it's not so okay, far. But here's what does happen. Now, mind you, I have this raving hate people. And what they do is they would go on these letter writing campaigns. So they would find out what I was doing, like working at the courthouse, and they would amass this campaign of, we're going to call 2020. Like, how could you have this person working there? You know, blah. And here's the deal.
Wow.
I have enough brain power and enough savvy to understand that there is a conviction there, and that means there's justification for people to feel the things that they feel. I can go there. I can get that. It doesn't mean that it's real because right. My perspective is different. But I can't necessarily stand up and say it's all wrong, right? Because there's a conviction there that says they're justified to feel the way they feel. So that's very empowering for them to feel like they get to decide the quality of my life. So, right. You know, anytime I tried to step out and partner with somebody or do something, they'd get this letter and I'd get this phone call. It's like, hey, so what happened for me is I was hiding. And back then,
you were trying not to let anybody know what was going on.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do.
Right. And, No, I get it. I think that would probably be the first reaction is, you know, just this. Let me see what I can do about like not letting this be known. Right.
Yeah. And
that's one strategy.
Yeah. So here's the hardest part was I didn't know anybody on the planet other than a fictional character like Alicia Florrick on The Good Wife who had been through what I'd been through. So my friends are saying, oh, my God, how are you going to get through this? Like, what are you going to do? Like, can we even go places together? Because are people going to like be mean to us?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're dropping like flies. Right.
Oh,
they're
totally.
Leaving. They're just like
Exodus.
We love you. But bye.
In private.
Right.
Oh, right. Geez. So wow. I literally have no
roadmap. So you're not getting any Christmas cards anymore.
Oh, no.
So, when I was listening to you on another podcast, it was like your life turned into a bad movie of the week.
Yeah.
Right.
It was one of those after school specials.
Did you ever feel like that your life became a movie? Because it feels like a movie to me when I'm listening to your life.
Yeah. Like I said, I could only relate to Alicia Florrick.
Right. A fictional character. Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It just baffles me that this happens in the real world.
It does. And now I talk to people like me all the time. And not just from a standpoint of legal. I mean, I talk to people who humble me because they've been through way worse things.
Wow.
And so for me, I got so sick and tired of trying to figure out how to Google how to kill myself painlessly without it being in the search history, right?
I could teach you how to do that.
Well, thank you, but I'm past that point.
Well, there might be other things you might want to keep out of your search history.
So. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, I don't know, purple socks for, my Donnie and Marie costume party. Yes. That's going to be a secret. Okay. Sorry. I interrupted.
No, it's fine. But seriously, I just got tired of thinking that life was going to be over. I had a son to raise. I had bills to pay. And I felt like I didn't deserve what was happening to me. And instead of feeling pitiful about it, I started to get a little of mad. My fight back.
Did you get a little mad? Good. Because mad's a little step up from, despondent.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So I went to a weekend retreat with some very high achieving women entrepreneurs. And I took the risk of telling my story, fully expecting them to say what everybody else had said, which was, oh, I don't know how you're going to get through
and step
that.
Step away. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And what happened was the complete opposite. Most of them had been following me on social media under my other brand, which was America's Divorce Coach. And even though things were going on, they said, oh my gosh, you just were always so awesome and helping other people and solving problems. And you had this grace about you. And I was like, what? And I realized, that I really was still Phaedra, 10 feet tall personality. I just was really compartmentalizing my life. And I was showing up powerfully under my brand, but I hadn't really integrated the two. And one of them suggested, actually, she didn't suggest it. She said, well, the truth is you're America's crisis coach. And that was just the aha moment for me. It was like, oh my God, I really can handle a lot of crisis. And she was saying, I've seen Phaedra take someone who is literally spiraling out of control and verbally just sit her on her ass and have her go, oh my gosh, and stop everything. So I realized that the tools that I was using in the divorce arena really applied everywhere. And I just made a conscientious effort to figure out the stuff that felt like a roadblock. And I walked into it, and that's how the video was born and my rebrand was born. And literally every negative thing stopped. And life just got better and better and better.
And the media cycle ended, right?
Yeah.
So now it's not in the news anymore. And, after a while, people stop caring what you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, oh man, I hate that space though, where you're in that having to justify everything. Oh my goodness. And then, but it's so liberating coming out of the other side, because like I said, when we were having our pre-show chat, your story just throws off all these like, oh, I want to talk about that. No, I want to talk about that. But I don't want to interrupt because it's such a great story.
Well, that's the elevator. If we were in Dubai, right, where there's 180 stories, that's my elevator pitch for that moment of my life. I mean, it's not something you can say quickly, right?
180 floors. It might take more.
Yeah.
That's great. No, but I was I had gone through depression myself when I was like really young, like 22, 23. So I've been in that dark place, and I know what it's like to be there and come out of it. So yeah, I don't know. It doesn't sound like you actually had any like serious attempts. You just sort of like considered it.
Yeah, I started thinking
that I'm going to put that on the list. I'm going to put that on a list.
Yeah, I mean it was the fail safe. It was the if it gets too rough,
I can always off myself. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeesh. That's a really good.
Yeesh. Well, yeah, yeesh, because, you know, I was there. And yeah, when you argue with the absurdity of the situation, and then it just spills into your identity and it spills into life. You know, it's just it becomes something that you are identifying with so greatly, you just can't see a way out of it. I've been there. I know what that's like. So, yikes.
Well, the key is that it's all tied to the grief and loss cycle. And shock and disbelief is the first phase. And bargaining, which is where I was with that, is the second phase, where you're like, well, I guess I could do this or I could do that, you know?
Right, right.
And then
you took
anger.
A step up. Now, yeah. Now you're moving. Now,
yeah. So right. Then, like you said, that anger is the next phase. And what's interesting is people think that depression would be one of the top, you know, the beginning of the grief and loss cycle. But the key thing is it's the second to the last. So that depression is when you're giving up the ghost, right? You're tired of being mad. You're tired of trying to figure it out. And
you're just
then
saying,
you're in the
screw
depression.
It all.
Yeah. And then that depression is what creates the end of the cycle, which is acceptance. And that's just laying it down and like, dude, I don't care. Do whatever you want. I don't care. You know,
this is what happened. This is who I am.
Yeah.
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 Fling your arrows, please.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. Bring it.
Yeah.
It's like in my intro to my podcast, it says, come at me, bro. You know, I got to that point. It's like, bring it.
Yeah. You can't hurt me now.
Exactly.
Your words can't hurt me. But I think you also learned something that I learned along the way through so many different channels, is that all these things that happen and this story that is swirling around your life and it's affecting your life and it feels like your life, but it at the end, when you come out of it, you realize that it never touches the intrinsic worth or intrinsic value of a human.
Oh, amen.
Right?
If anything, it shines a spotlight on it.
Right.
Because all the other bullshit falls away.
Amen.
And all that's left.
It gives you that clarity of,
yep,
there is so much bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I also wanted to relate to, because we talked a little bit about the Serial podcast.
Yeah. Right?
And how, you know, really that ended on a murky thing. But if anything, it needs to get relooked at, you know, by the court system, however that happens through appeals or whatever, because if nothing else, I have way more than a shadow of a doubt that guy's, you know, I don't know if he's guilty or not, but I have lots of doubt, way more than shadow.
Well,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And people, I say this all the time, we are all one accusation away from being on the defensive end of a courtroom.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't have the money, or you don't have the social status, or you don't have the right connections, you're going to get screwed.
Well, the other thing is it was against, you know, government.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's the old adage, you can't fight City Hall. They mm-hmm. just really want to embarrass you and make you take the deal. That's mm-hmm. and they want it to be over quickly. And when you and you don't, when you stand up to the bullying, then they really get mean.
Yeah.
I had a buddy that, I, you know, it wasn't a good idea, but he convinced a lawyer to go and do this sort of like, it's like a defamation style case against a contractor that worked for a government that he was fired from. Okay. So mm-hmm. you can't like do a court case in California as for wrongful firing, because everybody's at will in California. So they can fire you with, and they don't need a reason. You're just fired, you know. But they can say defamation was that they said things about him, and then he wasn't able to get a job in his field. That was the crux of the case. And when I looked at all of the evidence and everything that his witnesses were saying, and I, you know, I wasn't a witness, but I would have been if they would have asked me to, you know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't have enough technical expertise because it's, you know, everything government is very technical, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he totally lost. And when I got done and I thought about it, I was like, you know, it doesn't matter what is right a lot of times in a court case. It's what the government can make the jury think is what basically makes the jury the jury to decide what they're going to decide. So, you know, he gets his witnesses up there and they do all the technical things and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, by the letter of the law, they were right. Probably a lot like your husband. And then, you know, the government with, you know, endless amounts of money just keeps parading all these official looking people in front of the jury saying what a piece of crap the guy is. You know, it's, you can't win. It's a steamroller.
It totally is. And I can use myself as an example. The right thing for the courthouse to have done by me, I had worked there for 8 years. I had had nothing ever other than exceeds standards on my reviews. The judges all loved me. I mean, I knew what I was doing and I was really good at it. They really could have done me the courtesy of bringing me upstairs and saying, we'd like to encourage you to resign, but if you don't, they just fired me and that blackballed me. And I did reach out to some attorneys to see if there was anything I can do. And there's nothing I could do because nobody's going to go up against what attorneys are going to push against the judges, you know? And there's a documentary about California and it's called Divorce Corp. And it's all about the corruption. Yeah, it's all about the corruption in California government and how the, you know, judges are elected. Well, guess who pays the most into their campaign funds? Attorneys. Sure. And that's how they get the, you know, camaraderie. So no attorney is going to jump on the bandwagon, you know, to force the hands for the government. And I could go into a whole big tirade about divorce and California, but we won't. But what you just said is very, very true. Yeah. And unfortunately, being the person that I am and having the opportunities that I've had since being public and being willing and being able, you know, I'm now tied with the Innocence Project. I'm on what they call the Inmate Family Council. I understand at a much higher level exactly how easily people end up in prison because, you know, when they face you with the deal, the reason Jim didn't take a deal was twofold. Number one, he wasn't going to admit in front of God, country, and everyone, he did something he knew he didn't do.
Right.
But even bigger than that, perhaps he would have considered it. He, you know, he could have made direct phone calls to everybody and said, hey, this is what I'm going to do. But what they did is they said they were going to give him 25 years as a deal. Well, when you're 60, that doesn't sound appealing, right?
Wow. A deal for 25 years.
Yes.
Yeesh.
So
yeah, you're 60. I mean, you're still, that's not
so good. It wasn't motivating enough for him to say yes on multiple levels. Plus,
a deal is supposed to be, okay, you're done.
Correct. If they had said, you know,
you know, he might have gone for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ouch. So, I mean, so where we are now is we're in the appeal process and, you know, I'm hopeful that
talk to Sarah.
Yeah.
Like exactly. She'll want to do another one of those shows.
I'm sure his attorney would say, do not talk to Sarah.
Don't talk to Sarah. No, not a good idea.
Yeah.
So now let's talk a little bit about some of, if you can. So if you can't, then let's not. But I am like fascinated by like case study stuff where you don't use names, but just talk a little bit about some of your crisis-y type of clients. I mean, so, if you can share some of those stories.
So what I say is if I'm not talking about certain celebrities in the media, it's probably because there's a reason.
That's great.
Yes, you're right. It's very difficult for me to talk about things because, you know, my clients are also fans and I would never want somebody to hear me using their story anecdotally and have that. You know,
no, I get
make
that.
Them feel funky.
That makes sense.
I can talk about this one. Actually is divorce related, but I'm so super proud of this woman. She was married to a true and 100% diagnosable narcissist, which is a term that people throw around. But in this case,
it was verifiable.
It was certifiable.
DSM-5.
DSM-4.
DSM-4. Isn't there a DSM-5 now?
Well, there's additions, yes. So
anyway.
He's an Axis 2. So
I only did a bachelor's degree in psychology, so
excellent.
I had enough. I was excellent. Like, oof. Anyway.
Yeah.
Go on.
So nonetheless, when she came to me, she was incredibly distraught and was concerned because he was divorcing her and they lived in a very affluent area and his ability to socially ruin her, take the kids, do all those things seemed very likely. And working together, she completely kicked his ass. And I was so proud of her because she came to me so petrified and so scared that, as you said, right was not going to prevail. And in her instance, through all the education she got and knowing exactly how to behave and how to control her emotions and how to show up powerfully, it was a completely equitable divorce. So that's an example. And, you know, I've had some really, really unfortunate situations. But the thing that I will say is reputations, they're fleeting. And
it's not you.
It's not you. Exactly.
It's not
and
you.
And you really, there always is a plan B. And as I said, I've met people, I mean, for me, none of my children have died tragically. You know, I haven't had to bury a child who's been brutally assaulted and murdered. and I've met people who have, and it humbles me. And I've also met people who've called me because they were just indicted themselves and they don't know what's going to happen to their kids or to their house. And you're so attached to your stuff, right? Because people are messing with you and you realize on this side of it that it's just stuff.
Right.
And I'll never forget, I was in church on a Sunday and my phone started blowing up and I got out of church and answered it. And they're like, "Are you guys okay? Are you guys okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, what's going on?" Well, it turns out that they had put our house on the front page of the newspaper and essentially said, "Hey, you know, this guy's in jail and we've done some drive-bys and it looks like the house is unoccupied and, you know, there's some art in there." And the truth was our 19-year-old was my daughter, but at this point we're married, was living in the house. And basically it was saying, you know, go take out your social rage. Here's
go
the address.
Go trash this house.
Yeah. And so that, you know, the people will do really, really crappy things.
That's amazing.
It's wielding of power.
It is. I can't wait for your husband to get out.
Thank you.
And then there needs to be a movie. So who's going to play you?
And who's Chris Jenner?
What?
There's a reason I said that. I get asked a lot if I am her, and I know that, and it's usually by English as a second language people who've only seen like TMZ, and there must be enough of a similarity that people go, excuse me.
Wow. Okay.
No, I don't know who would play me. I have no idea.
Or who would play Jim, right? So that, you know, it could be anybody. I don't even know Jim. I don't know what he looks like. So it doesn't have to be close. Just a good actor.
Yes.
Yeah. I think this would be a great triumph story when he gets out.
Thank you.
Right?
My goodness. I hope so. I mean, there's a really cool book I'm working on. When he was in jail, the letters that we wrote back and forth are really our love story because we were really growing and becoming and deciding to be married. And I had a lot of questions about faith. And one of the things about Jim that's so amazing is his strong, strong faith and belief in God and that it was going to be okay and that he was willing to do whatever needed to happen. And that was part of his foundation for his courage. Well, as a woman witnessing that, it was very powerful. It was incredibly sexy. It was
Totally alpha, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So these letters
so
back and forth where I'm like, dude, how can you even say how great God is? Like they just took your house away, you know, or, you know, I just found, you know, you're disgusting, scratched in the side of my car. Like, how do we say God is great? And then his reply back, right? Written from a jail, you know, where he has no personal belongings and all he could use to write with is the inside of a pen. You weren't even allowed to have a whole pen. You could only have the filler.
Right, right. Yes.
You know, and he was amazing. So I have these letters and I just have this heart to write a book where the story's told through the letters. And in my mind, what I'd love to have is a stage show where it's behind the screen and you just see the silhouette of like bars and a guy, and you hear the voiceover of him, of the letter. And then you see, you know, the women's silhouette. And
I love it. Over.
And then at the very end, you know, we both walk out and they're like, what?
What? It's a real, oh my goodness. Oh, that's
yeah.
cool.
So that'd be cool. And I think that Alec Baldwin should play Jim.
He's the best.
He is the best.
He still is the best. What are you talking about? He's got that voice, man.
Swagger.
What a great voice. Oh, this has been amazing. So there was a couple other things I wanted to ask before we close up. Let me just say, okay, so americascrisiscoach.com. Got to get those promos in there. Oh, and let's talk a little bit about you're going to do a podcast, right?
Yes, it's launching December 28th.
Awesome.
And I'm super excited. It's called Coming Out of the Fire.
You are coming out of the fire.
Oh, man.
You're like the phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's cool. On my album art, I'm holding a microphone that's lit on fire for reals. It's not even Photoshopped. It was super fun to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
You burned the microphone?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Was it did you really destroy a microphone or was that
No, so
broken?
There's a trick. So here's what you do. You can light anything on fire.
Okay.
My photographers were awesome. They're kind of famous for this. So what you do is you take like duct tape, a section of duct tape, and you use rubber cement. Now, don't try this at home.
Right. Mythbusters warning. Do not try this at home.
If you're under, you know,
but it can
age.
Be done with experts around.
Correct.
Okay.
So you take a strip of duct tape and you put rubber cement on it. And then you light the cement, and the cement burns off. So you can, and it's a great flame. So it's really cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm thrilled about that. So
that's cool. So while you were going through it there during that year of whatever, you know, your stuff, you said you read a lot of books and you were going through. So, and it made me think of some of the books that I had read. So were any of those like Eckhart Tolle maybe, or any of those spiritual self-helpy books?
I had been through a lot of those books prior.
Oh, okay.
The one book that I loved the most, and it was called God of the Underdogs.
Mm,
it
I love
is it. An amazing book, and I'm just going to quickly take a peek here, and I don't want to butcher the author's name. So God of the Underdogs, it really helped me a lot because that's exactly who I was. And it really helped me know that for me, God uses the most broken people from the most batshit crazy situations to do really cool, epic shit.
And
so it helped me help Jim cope because, you know, he did not feel epic. He felt the shit, but he did not feel the epic.
Right.
And it just helped me know that there's a reason. And I know it sounds cliche, but there is a way to make a message, you know, out of your mess. And that is written by Matt Keller.
Ah, okay. Matt Keller. See, there's another one called In God's Underground. Totally different book.
Yeah.
I hate Bing. They give like the worst results ever.
Oh, interesting.
What I thought of, so when you were telling that story, was what Eckhart Tolle said about identity and how all that stuff in your life isn't you.
Yeah, and it's
you remember
kind of like,
that metaphor that he used? Yeah.
Absolutely. And what about like man's search for meaning?
Oh, yes. Perfect.
You know, Viktor Frankl. It's the dehumanization that Jim lives with. I mean, the things that he's told me that he's had to withstand. And, you know, here's an interesting caveat. So Facebook, you know, love it, hate it. I'd prefer it to be a playground than a battleground.
Right.
But sometimes, you know, you get what you get. Well, there are times when people in my sphere of influence forget about the particulars of my situation. And in one specific instance, a woman had posted something about all those people in prison. I just found out that they get syrup for their pancakes. That's bullshit. You know, they should just get, you know, crusty bread and water. And everybody starts chiming in about their opinions, you know, and I just went in there and said, hey, you know, you need to remember when you say these things that there's also the families that are attached. Well, she still hadn't pieced it back together of my situation. And she goes, nope, I stand by what I said. And so I made a video, which I'm famous for, on Facebook, and just gave my two cents. And essentially what I said is, the unfortunate reality is that a lot of people are in prison who deserve to be, and some are who aren't, who don't deserve to be. And right. And it's anyone's guess, you know, who gets to decide one way or the other. But here's the deal. The person who's in prison for drugs, they had a mother that did absolutely everything that they could to prevent that. The family who has somebody in there for murder, they have parents who have lost their jobs and have agonized and have had to deal with the fallout from it. They have children who have to go to school and have families, you know, have right. people whispering, oh, that's Susie and her dad, you know, molested somebody. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. there's these the families.
Guilt by association. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the stigma. And mm-hmm. these families are on Facebook and they are, you know, seeing this harsh criticism. And you know what? Their family members, it's a duality. Okay. Yes, there's the issue. But like we're taught, you love the person and hate the crime or yeah, love the right?
Yes.
So I did my video and I'll tell you what, it was the coolest thing because it hit her right between the eyes in a good way. Mm. And she came back and she goes, you know what? You gave me a perspective I had not considered. And so she asked to come onto my Facebook and vet an apology. Wow. And it was a really healing moment for all my fans, especially to see somebody humble themselves and say, you know what? I should have totally done that different. And you know what? I want to go buy syrup for everyone in prison kind of thing.
Yeah. Right.
you know, amen. So it, you know, it was
not
a good,
necessarily supposed to be punishment. I mean,
well,
it is.
Unfortunately, the psychology. Yeah. Well, no, here's the deal. See, psychologically, there is a tipping point. There is a tipping point where people are in prison and they're like, holy shit, I will never get myself in trouble for anything again. But because our sentences are extended, it goes into where it becomes a lifestyle. And then it becomes about just getting by and
it becomes comfortable and your lifestyle is what you,
yeah. I don't think it becomes comfortable, but it becomes your new normal. And right. it's kind of like Stockholm syndrome. You right. just
it's
get
like
used
what we,
to
and
it.
When I was in on deployment, when I was in the military,
yeah,
we always would just, you know, look at each other going, you know, it's weird what you can get used to.
yeah.
It's not fun. It's not comfortable, but it's your life. You know,
yes.
you just got a deal, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has been amazing. Mm-hmm. I want you to be on my show like all the time.
We should co-host a show.
Yeah, we should co-host this. There you go.
Available on iTunes.
I'll just show up and laugh.
Yeah. We can pratfall one another. You can't do that on audio.
No, and I'm not doing video because it's way too much work.
I have a face for audio.
You do? Wait a minute. You just made me you made me step in one there. You look great.
Oh.
Thank you so much. So
thank
we can
you
find,
so much.
We can find out more about Phaedra and everything she's got going on at americascrisiscoach.com and be on the lookout for her new podcast coming out December 28th, right? That's your launch date. And that's
yes.
coming out of the fire. Did I get that right?
You did.
Yay. And look for that picture of her hand really on fire. Not the hand, the microphone. Thank you so much, Phaedra. This has been a blast.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
Thanks. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thanks for taking the time to ride along with us on another episode of Vroom Vroom Veer. For podcast info and show notes, be sure to head over to vvveer.com. That's VVVER.com. Man, that's fun to say. And we'll catch up with you next time here on Vroom Vroom Veer.